Welcome to the Deep Dive,
where we try to make sense of, well, the messiest stories out there.
And give you that straight path to really knowing what happened. Today, we are taking a trip back. A high-speed trip, you might say.
Except without an actual vehicle.
Exactly. We're going to 1999 Manhattan, and we're looking at a world of just extreme luxury and, honestly, staggering gullibility.
We're talking about a story where $10 million changed hands for literally nothing, air.
It's a fantastic premise. I mean, what happens when a product is so exclusive, so, you know, revolutionary that you don't even need the product?
Right. The only thing you need to own it is belief, pure, unadulterated belief.
And that's what we're getting into today, the infamous $10 million invisible car scam.
Our main sources here are the episode companion source, The Invisible Car, and a really fascinating profile called The Billionaire Who Bought an Invisible Car.
They give us the full timeline, all the details, and our focus isn't just on the crime, which is wild enough.
No, it's about the ecosystem, the environment that let a scam like this even happen in the first place.
So our mission today is, well, it's a bit complex. We're going to track the scammer, this guy Leonardo Caprice.
His rise and his very, very quick departure.
But we're also going to spend just as much time, maybe more, on the mark. The buyer, billionaire Arthur Pendleton.
Because the real question isn't just how Caprice pulled it off, it's why. Why was Pendleton so psychologically primed, you know?
Why was he almost desperate to be scammed in this very specific, very strange way?
The central conflict, as we see it, is a $10 million fake product versus an ego so massive it couldn't stand owning anything less than the impossible.
It's not just a simple theft. It's about status. It's about the psychology of wealth at the turn of the millennium.
It really is. It gets into this powerful idea that when you're that wealthy, the more absurd something is,
the more you want it.
Exactly. The absurdity itself becomes the luxury.
Okay, let's unpack this. The very strange, and I have to say, wonderful case of the world's first invisible car.
Let's do it.
So let's set the stage. The context is everything here. We were deep in downtown Manhattan, 1999.
Right. Peak.com, boom. Money is everywhere. Excess is just normal.
And the usual luxury stuff, you know, the fancy watches, the sports cars you can actually see, they're starting to get a little boring for some people.
And our sources say that the scammer, Leonardo Caprice, he knew this. He understood this environment perfectly.
So he sets up shop. He opens what the source describes, and I love this, with heavy quotation marks, as a small luxury garage.
That phrase, small luxury garage, that's the first move in his psychological game. It's brilliant.
How so?
Well, think about it. A garage is a place for cars, physical cars. It's where you see them, touch them, kick the tires.
Right.
But Caprice's whole business was built on the car not being there. So right away, it's a paradox. It's jarring. He's selling a concept, an idea, but he's wrapped it in the packaging of a normal, high-end car dealership.
It's the perfect camouflage, really. I mean, if you walked into a jewelry store, they said, we only sell invisible diamonds, you'd walk right out.
Of course. But a garage, a place that, you know, deals with cutting-edge tech and prototypes, it gives the whole scam this veneer of possibility.
A technical excuse for the emptiness.
Exactly that. Caprice was a master of positioning. He wasn't selling stuff you could compare online or get appraised.
No limited edition watches.
Nothing like that. He was selling the absence of a thing and calling that absence the ultimate luxury item. The world's first invisible car.
And the price tag was part of the product.
Oh, absolutely key. It had to be a spectacular number, $10 million.
It couldn't be $100,000. That's not enough to suspend your disbelief.
No, it had to be a number so big that it just bypasses your common sense. The buyer thinks, well, if it costs that much, it has to be real. It has to be special.
It's that Veblen good idea, right? The more expensive it is, the more people want it. But this is taking it to its absolute endpoint.
The most illogical extreme, yes. Because the utility is zero.
Yeah.
Literally zero. And he chose a car, which is fascinating, because a car is normally the ultimate tool of visibility, of showing off your status.
A bright red Ferrari.
Right. But by selling an invisible car, he weaponized that idea. He tells the buyer, you're getting the ultimate status symbol. And the best part is, no one can ever compare their model to yours.
Its non-existence is the proof of its superiority.
That's it. So who on earth is the target audience for this? Who walks into an empty room and thinks, yes, I'll take it?
Well, our sources are very, very specific on this. The mark's name is Arthur Pendleton.
And his profile is just perfect. He's described as a billionaire so out of touch
that he was considered the only person dumb, rich enough to fall for it.
I love that phrase, dumb, rich enough. It's brutal, but it's so precise. It suggests that once you get a certain amount of money, you can become untethered from reality.
It's not just that he had $10 million to burn. It's that his whole idea of value was already warped. For him, a purchase wasn't about getting a thing.
No, it was about getting a story, a narrative.
And we have the perfect piece of evidence for that. A little anecdote that tells you everything you need to know about Arthur Pendleton's mindset.
The private island.
The private island. The source notes, he once bought an entire island. Why? Not for the beaches, not as an investment.
He bought it because, and this is a direct quote, its shape made him laugh on maps.
Think about that for a second. The sheer level of detachment. He's buying a geographical punchline.
It's critical to understanding him. It shows that the utility of a thing means nothing to him. What matters is the unique story, the private joke, the ability to own something for a reason no one else could even imagine.
That island purchase was basically a dress rehearsal for the invisible car.
It absolutely was. It's the same psychological muscle. Buying an island because it's funny is the same as buying a car because it's the rarest on Earth. Both purchases are just. They're pure ego food.
He had trained himself, over years of these absurd purchases, to value the story over the substance.
So Caprice has his stage, he has his perfect mark, now he just needs the pitch.
And the pitch has to be just right. It needs to sound high-tech and sophisticated, but, you know, not actually require any real science.
And this is where Caprice really shows his genius. He doesn't just say, it's invisible, that's too simple. He gives Pendleton a pseudo-technical alibi, a scientific-sounding reason.
The core of the lie. The car was made with an anti-shine coating.
That phrase is just, it's perfect. It's not accidental. Caprice's pitch was, it's made with anti-shine coating. Light tries to bounce off it.
Light tries to bounce off it.
Yes. What's so fascinating there is how that language works on the buyer. It leverages their desire to seem like they're in on a secret, like they understand some forbidden, cutting-edge technology.
It suggests the car is so advanced, it's actively defeating the laws of physics. It's not just invisible. It's superior to light itself.
And it creates this protective shield around the scam. See, if Pendleton questions the anti-shine coating, what is he admitting?
That he doesn't get it, that he's not smart enough.
Exactly. He'd be admitting technological ignorance. And for a guy like Pendleton, whose whole identity is built on being ahead of the curve, admitting you're not in the know is way more expensive than $10 million.
It's a classic con. You make the mark feel smart for falling for it.
You guarantee they won't go ask for a second opinion.
So this brings us to the crucial moment. The whole scam hangs in the balance. Caprice delivers this perfectly nonsensical line of physics. How does Arthur Pendleton react?
And the source is crystal clear. It says Arthur nodded as if this made perfect sense.
That nod. That's the whole transaction right there.
It's the psychological signature on the check. It means he's bought the narrative. He's all in. For people like him, complexity equals rarity, and rarity equals value.
And it happened instantly. No due diligence, no let me have my guy look at it.
Nope. He wrote a check for $10 million on the spot.
The speed of that transaction just proves that the value wasn't in some future delivery of a car.
The value was realized the second he heard the pitch. Caprice sold him the idea, the story of owning the impossible, and Pendleton paid the price of admission right then and there.
So the check is cash. $10 million is gone. And Arthur Pendleton now owns, at least in his mind, the world's rarest car.
But the story isn't over. I mean, not by a long shot. The transaction is done, but the, let's call it the performance of ownership, is just beginning.
Right. What do you do with a $10 million car that doesn't exist?
You perform with it.
Yeah.
And Pendleton immediately takes his non-existent purchase to the ultimate stage for performing wealth.
Beverly Hills.
Of course. The location shift is key. Manhattan was where the secret was made. Beverly Hills is where the secret is meant to be shown off.
He needs to be seen, not seeing his car.
Exactly. The car's value, even though it's invisible, was all about public display. This was never going to be a car that sits in a garage. It was a car meant to be driven through the most status-obsessed place on Earth.
He needs that external validation. Otherwise, he's just a guy who got scammed out of $10 million in a back room in Manhattan.
But if he drives it down Rodeo Drive, now he's an eccentric visionary, a man who owns the future.
And this performance, it wasn't just a one-off. The source is very clear. He did this for a week straight.
Yeah. This wasn't a brief lapse in judgment. This was a sustained, very conscious, and highly public act.
Let's get into the specifics, because this is where it really goes off the rails. The source says, For a week, he pretended to drive around Beverly Hills.
Okay, but it's the details of the pretending that are so telling.
He was making engine noises with his mouth.
Vroom, vroom.
And my personal favorite, he was yelling at traffic lights that didn't exist.
We have to analyze that. I mean, why the engine noises? Why yell at invisible traffic lights?
He's performing the act of being a luxury car owner.
Precisely. He's signaling. He's acting out all the little annoyances and status markers of driving a powerful, expensive car, the sound of the engine, the frustration with traffic. He's performing the whole experience, but without the inconvenient, you know, car.
But the risk here seems huge. The risk of looking completely insane. Isn't public humiliation more costly than $10 million, even for him?
You'd think so. But this brings us back to his ego. For Arthur Pendleton, the cost of admitting he was scammed,
admitting he was dumb,
was infinitely higher than the cost of appearing a bit eccentric or even totally unhinged. To admit the scam would shatter the very story he paid for.
But to continue the performance, it frames him differently.
Yeah.
He's not a victim. He's just avant-garde. So far ahead that we can't see what he sees.
Exactly. The $10 million wasn't for the car. It was the entry fee to perform this act of ultimate exclusivity. His refusal to admit he was duped is the ongoing payment for the product.
It's a kind of high-level social signaling through what, self-imposed delusion.
That's a perfect way to put it. In a world where every other billionaire has the fastest car you can see, the only way to one-up them is to own something you can't. The performance is the proof.
So this week-long performance, it just keeps escalating. And it culminates in the moment his private fantasy smashes into public record.
He files a police report.
With the NYPD.
This is the peak. This is either the height of his delusion or the most profound commitment to the performance I've ever heard of. He's trying to force the legal system, the state itself, to validate his fantasy.
He's trying to get his imaginary car an official case number.
He is. And he claims his invisible car has been stolen.
Stolen. Not just lost, but actively taken.
Which moves this from a, you know, a civil matter, a financial dispute, to a major felony, grand theft auto.
And the police, they're obligated to take the report from this prominent, wealthy citizen. So they have to start filling out paperwork for a crime involving a vehicle that has no description, no license plate, no president.
It's a bureaucratic nightmare, but it gets even better.
This is the detail, the single most absurd detail in the entire story. The part that shows you how deep he was inside his own logic.
He claimed the car was stolen from an invisible parking spot he painted himself.
Could we just pause on that? An invisible parking spot?
That he painted himself.
What does that even mean? Did he use invisible paint? Did he just mime the act of painting lines on the asphalt?
The source doesn't say how, but it tells us why. It's about control. He's applying the real-world rules of urban life. You need a designated spot. You have to protect your property to his completely imaginary asset.
It's not enough to have an invisible car. You need the invisible infrastructure to support it.
He's trying to create a safe, controlled little ecosystem for his fantasy, to protect it from the chaos of the visible world. It's a perfect self-sealing loop of delusion.
What do you mean by a self-sealing loop? Can you break that down?
Well, the loop starts with his belief. I'm rich and special enough to own the impossible. He buys the car. Now, if anyone challenges him, if they say, I don't see a car, what does he do?
He says they just don't get it. They don't understand the anti-shine coating.
Exactly. He uses the car's own invisibility as a defense mechanism. Their inability to see it just proves how exclusive and advanced it is. And that reinforces his own belief that he made a brilliant purchase.
So any criticism just makes him believe in it more.
Precisely. And the invisible parking spot is just one more layer of paint on that psychological shield he's built around himself.
Wow. So Caprice didn't just sell him a car. He sold him a bulletproof status defense system.
He did. And the police report is the moment the real world finally pushes back hard enough to break through that system.
Because even the most patient NYPD officer is going to have questions about an invisible parking spot.
And that's the catalyst. The investigation quickly stops being about a stolen car and starts being about the original transaction. They stop looking for the thief and start looking for the seller.
The absurdity of it all finally tips the scales. The authorities realize they're not investigating a car theft. They're investigating a massive fraud. So they turn their attention back to that small luxury garage in Manhattan.
And as you'd expect in a con this clean, the artist is long gone.
By the time they connect all the dots, the source says Leonardo Caprice was already in the Bahamas.
A quick, clean $10 million exit. He left behind nothing but an idea, a memory, and one very confused billionaire.
The sources have this great little bit of speculation about what he did next. They say he was probably selling invisible yachts.
Which is funny, but it's probably not far from the truth. It speaks to his brand consistency. He found his niche.
He's not just a one-off scammer. He's a specialist.
He specializes in selling immaterial status symbols to the hyper-wealthy. The invisible car was just his proof of concept. The invisible yacht is the natural next step. He's just scaling the business.
He understood that if a billionaire buys an invisible car, the only thing he'll want next is a bigger, more expensive invisible thing.
He basically identified a market failure in the psychology of the ultra-rich. When you can buy everything that's visible, the only thing left to desire is the impossible. So Caprice just started selling them the bragging rights to impossibility.
So Caprice is off living the good life. He won. But the real legacy of the scam, the part that's so fascinating, is what happened to Arthur Pendleton.
Yes. His enduring belief. That's the ultimate proof of how successful the con was.
His ego just... It could not process the fact that he was taken, that he was duped.
To admit that would mean admitting he was financially outsmarted, and even worse, that he was intellectually inferior. It would mean he wasn't special enough to own the rarest item on Earth. He was just dumb enough to fall for it.
So the fantasy had to be preserved at all costs. Even years later, the source says he still tells people he owns the rarest car on Earth.
He's still holding on to the core sales pitch. That's what he paid for. Not the car, but the right to say that, to tell that story for the rest of his life.
But then how does he explain its absence? He can't keep saying it was stolen forever.
And this is the final, beautiful, tragic little twist, the way his mind solved this problem. He doesn't say it's stolen anymore.
You just can't find where he parked it.
That little shift in the narrative is a masterstroke of psychological self-preservation.
How so?
Think about it. If the car was stolen, that means it's gone. It's a loss. He's a victim. The story has a sad ending.
But if he just misplaced it.
If he just can't remember where he parked it, he still owns it. The asset is still his. He's just a bit forgetful, a bit eccentric. It keeps the story and his ownership alive.
He chose being an eccentric over being a fool.
His ego made the choice for him. That little detail, can't find where he parked it, that's the final edit Arthur Pendleton made to his own life story to make sure the narrative stayed intact.
So what does this all mean when you boil it all down?
It means that the $10 million was just the ticket price, the entry fee for the greatest story Arthur Pendleton could ever tell about himself.
And the scam worked because the product, the story, was perfectly tailored to his deepest psychological need. He wanted unchallengeable exclusivity, and that's what Caprice delivered.
Which brings us back to that core thesis from our sources.
Mm-hmm.
If your ego is big enough, you don't need a car. You just need a story.
And what a story. The best part for Pendleton was that no one could ever criticize it. If someone said, "Your invisible car seems slow," what's his comeback?
You just lack the vision to appreciate its proprietary speed if they say it doesn't exist.
You don't understand the anti-shine coating. It's a perfect defense. It's unassailable.
It really highlights the unique vulnerability of the extremely wealthy. Their desire for novelty, for that one thing nobody else has, that becomes the very weakness a guy like Caprice can walk right through.
He didn't sell Pendleton a car. He sold him status that no one could ever see, which for Pendleton was better than a Bugatti that everyone could.
And you know, our sources connect this to other historical cons. There's a reference to an old inspector story. As Aladdin showed, the treasure is usually a trap.
And for Pendleton, the treasure of owning the rarest car on Earth was the trap. The minute he bought it, he was trapped inside his own performance.
It really shows that the psychological cost of protecting your ego can be so much higher than the financial cost of the initial mistake. He is still paying for that car every day with his performance.
A $10 million masterclass in the art of the con. Proof that if the target is rich enough, the product doesn't even have to exist.
Not at all.
Okay, let's bring this all back home for you. We went back to 1999 Manhattan. Leonardo Caprice sold Arthur Pendleton, the guy who buys islands because they're funny, a $10 million invisible car.
The pitch was based on the brilliant pseudoscience of an anti-shine coating.
And Pendleton's commitment to this was just total. He's driving around Beverly Hills making engine noises.
Until his fantasy crashes into reality when he tries to get the NYPD to investigate its theft from an invisible parking spot he painted himself.
Meanwhile, Caprice is in the Bahamas, probably pitching invisible real estate.
Well, Pendleton, to this day, still tells people he owns the car. He just can't remember where he left it.
So I want to leave you with a final thought to chew on. Arthur Pendleton is still telling this story. He still believes it. And that story still gives him a unique status that no other billionaire has.
So you have to ask, did Caprice's product actually succeed? He was selling a narrative, and Pendleton got a narrative that has lasted him for decades.
Did he actually deliver what he promised, even if the car was never real?
It really forces you to redefine what value means in a transaction like this. If the product is status and the delivery method is a story, then maybe Caprice was a master of customer satisfaction.
It's like that old line from our sources about Monopoly: the game trains you before it pays you. Arthur Pendleton's whole life of wealth had trained his ego to play this exact kind of bizarre high-stakes game. He was the perfect player.
A fitting end. The real price of the invisible car wasn't the $10 million. It was the loss of perspective that allowed the sale to happen in the first place.
If you want the full timeline, the receipts, all the deep psychological analysis on wealth and scams, you can find everything linked for you at Inspector Story. Thanks for diving deep with us.
Until the next deep dive.